morning, and welcome to the WINY Talk Show. It's time for you to be heard. The talk show welcomes everyone's calls once per hour. Dial 928-1350 and tell Northeastern Connecticut your story.
Good morning, Northeastern Connecticut, and welcome to the WINY Talk Show on this 28th day of July. It's Tuesday. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for spending a portion of your morning with us. Dave Ward on the air with you through 11 a.m., and as promised, we've been discussing what back to school looks like. We heard from Woodstock last week, and right now we want to welcome back to our microphone Superintendent of Schools, Dan Sullivan. Good morning, Superintendent Sullivan. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. Good to see the revised COVID studio you got
going on.
That's
right. Yeah, we're doing our social distancing and our plexiglass and masks and cleaning. We thank you for coming in and spending some time with us. I want to get your take. It's been an interesting 24 hours. We heard from the governor yesterday with some updates as to how he's approaching now the reopening of school. So let's, if we can start there. You had to have your plans put together and sent to the state by last Friday. What's the difference between what you submitted last week and what you've been planning for over the past weeks and now what the new information the governor has shared?
Well, you know, it was an interesting response from the governor yesterday because on the one hand, I think it very much indicates that he has heard loud and clear from the teachers' unions and the superintendents' groups and probably the boards of education around the state that they asked for a one-size-fits-all model, and Connecticut is, in so many different ways, is not one-size-fits-all because it's not just the geographic quadrants of our state, but you have high schools, and I believe Greenwich is, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 or 4,000 kids. And you have Putnam High School that has just under 300 students. So you're asking people to do the same. And what I also think a lot of people don't recognize is that if you visit a large high school and then you visit a small high school, the hallways are not very different in size, and the classrooms are not very different in size. What's different is the size of the footprint. And so our ability to exercise social distancing in the hallway, as opposed to a school that, you know, is body on body when passing time comes, is just drastically different. So, you know, at the end of the day, we're always going to have to do what's best for Putnam. And the governor alluded to the possibility yesterday that maybe, you know, not all schools would open 100%. But he also made a point somewhere in there, you know, somebody said, well, you know, there was supposed to be an announcement late, you know, Thursday of this week. Will that happen? And he goes, oh, no, definitely not Thursday. You know, we're going to wait at least a couple of weeks before school starts, but we'll give superintendents a couple of weeks' notice. So while he backed off the idea that everybody every day, we still haven't really gotten that green light because they're going to tell us 2 weeks before what our flexibility is. And that flexibility is very much driven by the governor, because we are still operating today under an executive order waiving the 180-day requirement. That executive order expires early this fall. So if they don't extend the executive order or the legislature doesn't take action relative to the 180-day requirement, you know, that flexibility means what?
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. As I was watching the news conference yesterday, and the governor is going to be with us on Friday, so we're going to certainly pass along these questions. I was not clear on what the governor's directive was to folks in your position yesterday, because you had to submit three different plans, an in-classroom, an online, and then a hybrid plan. Every school district had to do that. he said that we want kids to go back to school, but then said, you have options. Do you have options? Can you pick between one of those three right now and say, this is what we're going to do?
Not if there's a 180-day slash 900 hours requirement.
Right. And that has to be addressed by September 8th, I believe. That's when the executive order, the emergency order, runs out.
Well, yes. But I think we need to know sooner. And you know, he told us yesterday we'll have 2 weeks' notice because, you know, we need to operationalize a plan. I think what's... There's so many things that are really important about opening school in the fall. And one of those, and what concerns me about the 2 weeks, if I'm being completely honest, is we'll figure it out. If he gives me 2 weeks' notice, then we'll work with 2 weeks' notice. We'll figure it out. But I really worry about parents only having 2 weeks' notice as to whether their kid's going to school 5 days a week, whether their kid's going to school 2 or 3 days a week, or, oh, surprise, your kid's not going to school. Like, I really believe that the state needs to give parents more notice than that, in particular, because if you're a parent who has a child that's not school age, you probably have always needed a daycare plan to work. But if you have a child who, I'll make up, you know, an age 10, who, you know, maybe comes home from school and is home by themselves for 30 minutes or for an hour, or maybe the neighbor sort of watches them, that's been your plan, but that's not going to work for all day. You know, and maybe the neighbor that watches them for that hour after school just gets home from work right before then, but maybe they have to work too. Like, families need more time.
Where do you stand on this? To go back or not to go back?
That's a complicated question. I'm, you know, quite honestly, I'm torn. I do believe when I hear the statements that students learn best in classrooms in front of teachers. I do believe that. And I also believe that there's a lot of things that students learn in school that you can't learn over a computer in terms of social skills, relationship building. I also believe that, you know, for some students, going to school is the best part of their day for any number of circumstances. And, you know, and that's before I get into, you know, the impact on families if students need to stay home. So I think all that's important, but I also obviously very much believe that everybody's health and safety is critically important. So I believe in order for kids to go back to school, we need to be able to, you know, meet some minimum standards. I do, you know, when this... Back in June, when they talked to us about designing a plan, they coined the phrase maximize social distancing. So from the month of March until that day, you know, I feel like the American standard of social distancing was 6 feet. And then all of a sudden, we were using the term maximize, which somehow no longer meant 6 feet. So in Putnam, our goal has been to create 6 feet of social distancing in all of our classrooms with, you know, and also building for the possibility of every kid coming back. And we have achieved that with the exception of a few classrooms in the middle school. And we've identified that problem as, believe it or not, some odd size, a little bit oversized desks in some of the classrooms. So we're now tackling that component to address that because I believe the 6 feet is critically important. Our ability to bring students in, bring students out, and buses, you know, certainly is concerning. We've added a tier of busing for the fall to reduce the number of students on the bus, and we did it in such a way that we pulled out grades 4 and 5 from the elementary school and grades 6 from the middle school, which we had two tiers of busing, one that was elementary and then one that was for the middle and the high school. So now by creating this separate 4 to 6 group, we reduced capacity on all of our buses and reduced the number of kids going into the building and leaving the building at the same time. So I think those are things that have helped. But at the end of the day, you know, under the current metrics, a hybrid still may be better, where we have fewer kids in the classroom, but we still have kids in the classroom. But I do recognize that creates a hardship for families. And if the health metrics change, I certainly can't rule out the possibility of going back to distance learning, because I know the science is, you know, contradictory at best right now about youth with this virus, but what's not unclear to me is that asymptomatic people can give it to other people. So even if students fare pretty well, they're still going home to parents and grandparents and other relatives who are not their age, who are, you know, more at risk, and that's before you get into people with health issues.
We've heard that from a number of our listeners as well, where they watch their children or grandchildren, other grandchildren in particular, and say, I'm worried because, you know, they normally come home in September, October, and usually bring something home to me, and we all suffer together a little bit. This seems to be way more serious, and I'm concerned about it.
Absolutely.
Tell me about meeting the criteria that the state set. We're talking about over $700,000 for the school district in order to achieve the requirements. Is that accurate? Is that correct?
It is. But you know, the reality at this point is, by and large, that investment's been made. So, you know, one of the more concerning things to me from the onset of all this is, because we have not had firm direction, and, you know, to be clear, as we already talked about, we still don't have firm direction about the fall. We couldn't wait to make that investment. We couldn't say, well, let's see what they say in August and then we'll order that. Because similar to you, we ordered the polycarbonate, for example. WINY came out last week, and I believe, you know, the photos went up online. Mm-hmm. You know, we made some pretty heavy investments in our school buildings, and I think those were the right things to do. And I also, barring a miracle cure, we're probably still dealing with this time next year. So it's probably still a good investment. But nonetheless, we have gone out and made the investment in the polycarbonate. We have made the investment in an additional tier of busing. We're hiring an extra elementary school teacher and an extra middle school teacher to reduce class sizes. We've done everything we can to prepare for the possibility of kids coming back to school, to do what we can to keep our adults safe, to keep our students safe. But with all that said, I think this is a virus where even if you do all these things, it doesn't mean that people won't get sick.
Sure. I think that you've all been very creative about making this work and achieving the state criteria that was set. And I've heard a variety of different hybrid ideas. And one of them talked a lot about bringing the elementary school age children back, but leaving the high school kids to go online. Have you heard that proposal? That's an interesting one to me, and it touches a variety of different categories, where the younger kids are going to have a harder time, or the parents of younger kids are going to have a harder time with daycare versus the high school students who can be home and can do distance learning without as much supervision. There's a lot of different ideas out there about what a hybrid looks like, and I'm hearing more and more about different ideas in that vein.
Yeah, so that, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, because One of the things when I communicated with parents, I pointed out, you know, really what hybrid means, at least in Putnam. So when the state asked us to develop a model, the hybrid was about reducing capacity in the schools. So the hybrid, from the standpoint of the choice of words hybrid, is, for lack of a better word, half the kids today, half the kids tomorrow. But the question that you're posing is something that I've heard on and off through superintendents meetings. So it's clear that for economic reasons, the state has talked about the possibility of how do we get our elementary kids back to school? Because if elementary kids aren't at school, then it makes it difficult for parents to work. And I'm not arguing with that. But it does go back to what we talked about a few minutes ago. Beyond the health metrics of this as to whether or not elementary kids can get sick, or they can certainly transmit it, there's no argument about that. So having all of the elementary kids in school, you know, but having the middle school and high school kids stay home, I'm not sure of the logic of that. If we had a 3,000 student high school, I would understand the logic of that. Because talking to friends of mine from my past life as being a high school principal, if you have a large school, even 25% of the kids, you know, could be anywhere from 500 to 1,000 kids. But in Putnam, you know, we have just under 300 kids in our high school. So I think if we're talking about our elementary kids coming back to school, then it bears talking about our middle school and high school kids coming back to school because of our size.
What does a hybrid model in Putnam look like?
The model that we designed has students broken into a blue group and into a white group based upon alphabet. And we've built a calendar that's posted on our website that really is just our district calendar for the year, but we preloaded the blue days and the white days so that if in the event that we are on a hybrid, our parents can be planful for that. So blue days are Mondays and Wednesdays, white days are Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then we alternate the Fridays. And again, we preloaded all of those because I recognize that if we're on a hybrid, it's going to create a childcare hardship for families, and I don't want them having to guess what day is what. And that's why we went with the consistent days as opposed to, you know, alternating days where, you know, you need some consistency in your life.
Absolutely. Now, if a decision comes down in the next couple of weeks and the governor says the health metrics have changed, we're not going to go back, how are you prepared to address online learning?
So we've had a reopening committee like every school district, and we talked about what schedule seemed to work best last year for students. Like, when can you actually get them in front of the computer? Because not surprisingly to me, having two teenage boys, 7:30 in the morning, when you don't actually have to leave the house to go to school, you're not going to get the high school kids on the computer.
That's rough. Yes.
So, but then we found that by and large, for most kids, you know, 10 o'clock seemed to be, about as consistent as you could get for a time that we could get kids to log into the computer. So we will run something of a bell schedule for all of our grades beginning, you know, at or around 10 o'clock, and then have login time on the computer with some level of direct instruction, and then build in breaks, including lunch breaks. And depending on the grade level will be the length of your online school day. But there was a few things we heard loud and clear from parents last year. for elementary school in particular, distance learning was a challenge. So, you know, having to try to, you know, take the lessons that were posted online and provide instruction to children and to, you know, get them to sit down and do the assignments, post the assignments, over time just became difficult at best. And if you were working and then trying to come home and, you know, maybe make dinner, try to homeschool your third grader, and then having some time just to yourself to decompress before you do it all again tomorrow, just rough. So the idea of doing that for the entire school year is just not sustainable. So we've made the investment in Putnam, and that goes back to that $700,000 expense. Is at this time last year, Putnam did not have one-to-one devices at any grade. We will open school this year with one-to-one in grades 3 through 12. So it's a massive investment and a rapid shift, but a necessary one. And we made the investment in a Zoom license. We also have Microsoft Teams as a tool, but Microsoft Teams, the volume of internet you need is just too much. And Zoom is an easier platform and doesn't require the level of internet signal that Teams does. But they talk to each other. So Teams will be a warehouse for us to be able to post assignments, post files, collect work, run a little bit of a bulletin board and stuff for classes. But Zoom will be the platform for some face-to-face interactions with other students and with the teacher. And we're hoping that the schedule looks something like, depending on, again, grade appropriate, class coming together and some level of direct instruction, you know, could be 10, 15, 20 minutes, depending on the topic, depending on the grade. Students working independently while the camera is shut off and people, you know, are muted, but then you unmute if you need help and you ask the teacher, you know, Mr. Jones, you know, can you help me for a second? There's also a breakout rooms feature in there for people who maybe need some help without disturbing the other students. You know, after maybe 40, 45 minutes, class wraps up, take 15-minute break. So, you know, you can just get away from the screen, you know, use the facilities, what have you, and then, you know, and then log back in and try to have something of a school day where you're as best you can replicating the instruction, replicating the interactions with peers, and having a better product.
Over the course of the spring, how did you address connectivity? Was everybody connected? How did you get everybody connected? Was that a challenge?
That is an unresolved challenge. I'm not going to hide from it. We recognize that not all of our families are connected. We looked at some of the hot spots that some districts talked about providing and recognized that what they were providing was inadequate. I mean, it was providing, you know, if you went with the plan, it was less than 30 minutes of connectivity a day. And that is operating under the assumption that the students or family members would never use the hotspot for anything other than school, that you would get approximately 30 minutes of connectivity for school each day. And I just think, you know, quite honestly, to think that somebody who doesn't have internet will never use it for anything other than the 30 minutes of school, it just doesn't make sense.
But it's very unrealistic.
But then when you look at the cost of the level of hotspot that people would need, you know, the better devices are, you know, in the neighborhoods of a couple hundred dollars. And then you're looking at $40 a month times every family. We just don't have the kind of budget. And we've asked for help from the state going back to last year. And if you rewatch the press conference when they talked about reopening schools, the state says that this is something they're going to address. And I've talked to people at SDE, and they say this is a priority of the governor's, and they're, you know, he's committed to addressing this. So I have a cautious level of optimism that this is somehow going to be addressed by the fall. I do know there are places in our country, and I believe there's a few places in Connecticut that have a community Wi-Fi. And, you know, Putnam at this point is not one of them, but I'm sure those come at a cost too. But to me, if students are going to be on full virtual learning, we need help from somewhere for access to Wi-Fi, because, you know, a lot of vendors made proclamations last year of, you know, what they were doing to help those without the internet. But when you went and read what was being offered, you had to be a new customer. You had to be somebody who never, did not have any outstanding balances. So when you start eliminating who maybe had Wi-Fi at one point but canceled it because they could no longer afford it, when you look at people who maybe had been laid off because of the pandemic who could not afford to pay their cable bill, you know, strike one, strike two, they weren't able to get the alleged free Wi-Fi that was being offered. And then three, they required a long-term commitment. So really wasn't a bridge to like, hey, let us get you through the pandemic.
How do you, or how does the school district, how will the school district approach that unevenness? Some students are going to get, have a better experience and better exposure and, quite frankly, better education than maybe some other students in different socioeconomic situations. So how do you get everybody on the same page so that everybody's advancing forward together? Is there such a thing?
It's difficult because what we're doing is we're asking the people who don't have access to the internet to do more than others, honestly. So we're providing the device, but then we're in essence asking them to locate internet access to do your work, which, you know, I talked to a lot of people about this last spring. You know, still a challenge, but I guess if it's a nice day, there are places in Putnam where you can go and, you know, maybe be able to access public Wi-Fi, from a restaurant or something like that. But how does that work on a rainy day? How does that work if we get to November and December and January and it's cold? It falls in that category of unrealistic. So, you know, I've been banging the drum. I've talked to legislators. I've talked to the State Department of Education. I've talked to the CAPS group about this. I've talked to Putnam parents about this. And it's not unique to Putnam. There are so many communities that need access to public Wi-Fi. And in fact, the Putnam Board of Education adopted a resolution at our meeting last spring to recommend to the Connecticut Association of Boards of Education that we have reached a point in our society, and we've definitely reached that point if we're on distance learning, that access to the internet is an essential service, the same as gas and electricity are in the winter. Like, we can't ask our kids to learn from home and then not give them this support.
I have that same question, but in a 50,000 foot view. If Superintendent Sullivan is going with one plan, and the next town over is going with their own plan, and then the town next to them is doing something different, how do you keep the basic level of education of children the same so that they are advancing, like they're getting ready for college, for instance. Everybody's going to be on a different level, or will they, if everybody's operating on a different plan?
Well, to be completely honest, we've been operating on a different level for probably 100 years. And I don't say that to be wise or cynical. You know, when people talk about equity in education, and Commissioner Cardona speaks to it frequently, I don't know if it's ever been even in our country. You know, just look at the way people view colleges. Like, you know, people put, and understandably so, but people put Yale and Harvard and Dartmouth on a different tier than Eastern and Central, and for that matter, UConn. But in our own Connecticut, I think everybody views UConn as, no pun intended, the top dog, and you know the other school is a little bit behind it. And that's true of our K-12 system. People move to certain towns because of the schools, and they have district reference groups because of socioeconomic status. So, you know, when you measure Putnam, you do it through a district reference group of quote-unquote like schools. You don't measure it necessarily just based upon surrounding towns. And so it's been uneven forever, and a lot of people have actually talked about, is the pandemic the beginning of what will hopefully lead to a long-term equalization? Because, for example, Putnam was not 1-to-1 last year. Not because I don't think the community wanted it to be. It was a financial investment, as small as we were, that we were unable to make. The pandemic forced our hand, and we're paying for a lot of those devices through, you know, grants and CARES Act money. But, you know, perhaps the big question will be, if the pandemic is resolved at some point and we go back to traditional funding, when these devices reach the end of their useful life, will we still be 1-to-1? Or will we reach a point where, like, we'd like to be, but we can't afford to replace the devices?
What would you like to see? Would you like to have that local control over this decision to open in the fall? Or would you rather see the governor have one policy that applies to all 169 communities?
I believe that I speak for many superintendents when I say that I would like more direction from the state, but not necessarily a one-size-fits-all for the state. I go back to the geographic nature of this, and for starters, you know, last spring, for example, the crisis in Fairfield County was different than the crisis in Windham County.
True.
I'd like more direction. More direction does not necessarily mean that I would not like local control, but what I don't want is a situation where they kind of just wash their hands of it so that, you know, that people aren't mad at them, so to speak. There's a lot of challenges here. People need access to resources, and opening schools requires funding, and there's been talk that, like, oh, you know, I believe that, you know, the comment yesterday was there's $99 million. Well, are we getting any of that? Because I noticed when they made their broad announcement about helping school districts and giving out more devices in the last week or two, I don't believe anybody in Northeast Connecticut was on that list. And I don't believe that Putnam is the only community in Northeast Connecticut that could use some help with additional devices.
Absolutely. Let's take a commercial break. I have lots more questions for you. Superintendent of Schools for the town of Putnam is joining us, Daniel Sullivan. We'll take a break and return with more of the talk show coming up next.
The COVID-19 pandemic is making all of our lives more difficult than ever, but we at the Northeast Law Center on Providence Street in Putnam want you to know that we are still here to help simplify your legal challenges. Are you home recovering from an injury and need some legal advice? Or maybe now that you're at home more, you're having issues with your neighbor? You should know your legal rights. Given the current circumstances, you may not want to meet with us in person, but through modern technology, we can still meet with you remotely to consult with you, help you mediate a solution, or prepare to go to court if necessary. Our firm also provides business law services, asset protection, wills, trusts, real estate closings, and much, much more. Seasoned attorneys Borner, Smith, Alleman, Herzog, and Cerrone are at the Northeast Law Center, available to help solve your legal issues. Call us today at 860-928-2429 or visit our website at nectlaw.com to contact us. We're open and waiting to help. Be safe and stay safe. We'll get through this together.
The Quinebaug Valley Senior Center is distributing free coupon books from the Connecticut Department of Agriculture's Senior Farmers Market Nutrition Program. Each coupon book contains six $3 coupons, which can be used at our local farmers markets. For your free coupon book, come to the touch-free drive-through distribution event Monday, July 27th and Wednesday, July 29th from 9 till noon at the Quinebaug Valley Senior Center, 69 South Main Street in Brooklyn. For more information, call 860-774-1243.
The census is more than a headcount. It's how lawmakers decide how much money your community gets for critical services like roads and bridges, SNAP, WIC, and Head Start programs, energy assistance, and so much more. We need your help to get your community counted. Go to census2020.gov and click the respond button. It takes less than 10 minutes and your information is secure. Fill out the form online and skip the visit from the census workers who will be going door to door beginning August 11th. Go to census2020.gov today and help Connecticut get counted.
Be part of the solution, not part of the problem. Call the WINY Talk Show now and offer your opinion and ideas at 928-1350. Call now and be heard.
Call. Don't be afraid. You can call me. Tell me and I'll be around.
Welcome back to the WINY Talk Show. We'll open up the telephone line. Superintendent of Schools for the town of Putnam, Dan Sullivan, is with us this morning. Dan, tell us a little bit about the feedback that you're getting from parents. We hear a lot of questions right here on the talk show. We all hear it out on the street. What does it look like? How are you interacting with parents and acquiring some of that information to help you put together your plans?
So we sent out an initial survey last spring, right near the end of school, to get some feedback on distance learning and to get some, you know, some perspective on where parents stood on the upcoming school year. And then somewhat ironically, yesterday I sent out a more serious survey to parents saying, like, okay, here we are. What do you want to do in terms of coming back to school next fall? And what do you want to do in terms of transportation so that we can make our plans? And there's the rollover of technology as students advance from grade A to grade B didn't work the way it was supposed to. So I quickly realized that I sent out a survey to all of our families and was only reaching 300 of them. So I pulled the survey back. But I know from hearing from folks that parents are like, how come I didn't get a survey? Where did the survey go? So the technology people at a company called Tyler, which operate our student database and communicates with another platform, ParentSquare, promised that they'll have it resolved today. So I hope to push out that survey to parents today. I realize some people may look at it and say, all right, it's still last week of July, and you know, it's still too early, and it may be, but we can't wait longer to plan on our part. We realize that people may change their position, and certainly if the health metrics change, but we need to have a sense of where people are at for class sizes and things like that.
All right, parents, keep an eye on your inbox for a survey from the Putnam Public Schools coming Maybe today.
Hopefully.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's a great opportunity to just stay in touch with everybody. Are you getting questions about how you're going to handle health? Have you had to address nurses' offices? And do you have to expand any staff on that front? How are you addressing the health piece of this? That's such a broad question.
No, but I understand.
But when a student, what happens when COVID walks into a Putnam Public School facility?
Well, that's a loaded question there. But you know, I think almost all school districts have the same plan for this because you don't have as much flexibility on this metric. So we need to. The first part about this that is particularly challenging, quite honestly, this all begins at home. So the expectation on parents from the state level, and it's something we're going to have to remind parents about, is there's an expectation that parents are doing an initial screening of their children every day before sending them to school. So what they want is parents, taking temperatures at home because they're going to know what their kid's normal temperature is. And they haven't left the house yet, so they're not exposed to a day like today where it's crazy hot and you're on the bus and all of a sudden you show up and, you have a false temperature because you've been on a hot school bus. So it begins with parents screening at home and monitoring their child's symptoms and truly keeping kids home from school if things aren't right. And honestly communicating with the school about symptoms. And then at school, we're supposed to do, a level of screening, but we're not taking temperatures when they walk in the door, but we are looking at kids and saying, like, he doesn't normally cough, and, he's been coughing quite a bit. Like, he probably needs to go see the nurse or somebody who appears to, maybe be exhibiting other symptoms, not to mention the kid who just self-reports, that they have a really bad headache or what have you, then we need to go through our screening process and identify whether they're COVID symptoms. Then we need to maintain an isolation room and have a way to get students home to parents quickly. And then follow a protocol of how many days they're out of school and, how long they're symptom-free for before they return and whether they're going to be tested in order to return. So we all, in essence, have the same plan. And I think it's also, to be quite candid, some of this is going to be annoying and frustrating for families and staff because of the number of things that qualify as a COVID symptom. So you could have somebody who just legitimately has an upset stomach from something they ate who will either need to have two negative tests spread at least 24 hours apart to return to school or stay out for a period of time. And, people may say, well, that's crazy. Just like somebody could have a headache because it's really hot and they're dehydrated, but headaches fall as a COVID symptom and they would have to go through those same procedures. So, there's going to be a lot of the COVID world that's out of an abundance of caution, but the key word is caution. Like, as annoying as it might be, the ultimate goal is to have people be safe and have as few as people as possible get sick. But I also think if school opens and the idea that nobody would get sick is just naive because this virus doesn't discriminate.
What are you hearing from teachers? What are teachers asking you for or telling you or advising?
Well, like everybody else in society, it runs the gamut. I have some teachers who are really excited to get back and really miss being in their classroom. And I have some people who have some real serious concerns about their health and safety and the health and safety of students. And then a lot of people in the middle that want to know, all right, what are we doing? And, are you doing everything you can to keep everybody safe? So there's no one size fits all answer there. You know, people don't become teachers because they don't want to teach. Like, I am confident that regardless of where people fall on the pandemic, you know, they love teaching kids and this is what they want to do and it's a passion for them. They just, you know, want to know that everybody is safe, but not everybody is the same age. Not everybody has the same health circumstances. Some people have people at home with compromised immune systems. So there's no simple answer to that question.
We've had some questions here on the talk show about teachers' roles. And if you go to distance learning again in the fall, teachers working from home or teachers coming into school and utilizing the resources that they have at school and teaching from school, are those any options that have been discussed and how do you approach those?
So, you know, last year, actually, the executive orders from the governor exempted schools from the stay-at-home order. So our buildings were always accessible to our teachers last year, and we made a point of saying to them, you're welcome to come in and, you know, videotape a lab, like whatever you want to do, whatever you need to do. I think, you know, again, our decision-making will be driven by health metrics. So if there's a surge and the governor is asking everybody to stay at home, you know, we'll consider that in our decision-making. But if our metrics were more similar to today, then we are going to say to, you know, teachers that it's our expectation that you report to work. And for all the reasons you just said and more, but I also think, you know, that we'll probably offer people the option to request to work from home. But, you know, we'd have to navigate that request to make sure they have access to everything they would need to work from home. Because, you know, if you don't have a secure workplace, or if you're also taking on additional responsibilities at home, it may make it a challenge for you to work in that bell schedule and teach Zoom classes. And then, do you live in a place with reliable internet? Do you live in a place with reliable cell phone service if you need to talk to somebody? Because if people are going to be home, we also need them to be able to do their job.
How do you address special ed? That's a question that we just got on the talk show.
So my special ed director is Christine Drew, and she does a really terrific job of working with families and you know, going through all of the directives and executive orders to make sure we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. The frustration that she has shared with me is that when there are meetings about a lot of these topics, the response is guidance is forthcoming. So we are awaiting state guidance for what expectations we have for all of the different scenarios, including the families who choose, and I'm using the state term now, not Putnam's term, opt in to distance learning, meaning, you know, I'm not comfortable sending my child to school, but I still want them to get an education. And that is one area in particular where we are awaiting guidance as to what our responsibility is if they're choosing not to come back to school, but yet school is open.
Before we run out of time, when we've talked about this subject, we talk a lot about reading and writing and math. And how are you approaching the mental health question, the emotional health of students? They had a hard time in the spring. They're having a hard time in the summer, no activities or not many that they can actually take advantage of. And now we're talking about going back to school, and there are so many questions around it. Normally we'd be getting school clothes and backpacks and pencils, and we'd be focusing on that right now as we head into August. And kids are having a hard time wrapping their head around where we're at. How, as a school district, are you addressing the mental health concerns?
So that is one of the things that, you know, we have a whole separate committee. Director of Curriculum, Donna Maynard, has been working with a team of district staff on the social-emotional piece since last spring, developing lessons for all of our grades to introduce various topics and to help, you know, create a dialogue with kids. And it's our expectation that that dialogue is going to occur no matter what model we're under. And that goes back to the in-person Zoom lessons. Like, it, you know, it may sound hokey, but getting the kids on the computer and getting them interacting with their teachers and their peers is critically important. But we need to build in those advisory times or those class meeting times in the elementary grade to really just check in with how people are doing and to let people maybe vent their frustrations and ask questions. And because, to your point, we've always prioritized educating the whole child, and we don't want to lose those critical skills right now. And we know that there's been some COVID slide, but we also need their health.
Dan, thank you so much for spending the time with us this morning. A lot of good information to share. Alert the parents again. We want to let them know that there's a survey coming. Check your inbox. It's being worked on right now, where you're going to have a chance to offer some more input. And please keep us up to date on what's happening. The microphones are always open.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. We're going to take a break now for news, our national and international news, and local news with Cherie up next.
1350 AM WINY Putnam and 97.1 FM W246 DN Putnam, online at WINYradio.com.